Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar. Joining me today is Senior Writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing okay. And we will be talking about the Rabbit R1 and the state of AI gadgets at this point, or just how terrible they are. So we've got a special guest to join in for that, too. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. We also are doing live streams of this recording, typically Thursday mornings around 10:30 a.m. Eastern. Today, we're actually doing it a little earlier. So, stay tuned to our social channels for that stuff, too. I'm at Devendra on Twitter. I usually announce it there. But join us. It's a good time. We've got a good group of folks watching us make the show. So let's talk about the Rabbit R1. And joining us to do that is senior editor at CNET, Lisa Edichico. Hey, Lisa.
Hey, thanks for having me today.
Happy to have you on. And I wanted another voice of somebody who has fully experienced the Rabbit. And I don't know, the horrors or the frustrations around this thing. So I will let you have the first word. Can you describe what the Rabbit R1 is, Lisa, and your overall thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's always the first question I get when I talk about the Rabbit R1 is, what
the hell
is this thing? I have it right here, actually. It's basically just this tiny orange box that you speak into to ask it for the weather. You can ask it, or you're supposed to be able to ask it to order an Uber. I have not been able to successfully do that yet.
Has not worked. Yeah.
DoorDash, it's basically like having a voice assistant in your pocket. The idea, I think, is really intriguing. I think when this thing was first announced at CES, it kind of captured everyone's imagination a little bit. The idea of this operating system that can somehow tie together, all of your accounts and services without needing to open any apps and just get things done for you. Sounds great. But I think what we're seeing here that a lot of people will agree is just like a very early product that doesn't seem finished yet, to put it kindly. And it's funny that you mentioned...
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's funny that you mentioned frustrations. I just had a video go up yesterday. It's not a video review, but it's kind of like a behind the scenes of like how I tested this thing. It's like I took it out for a day of sightseeing to see like how it could help me and things like that. And there are times where I just look like visibly frustrated. And I just love it because it's such like a raw reaction of what it's like to actually use this thing. Whereas a lot of my reviews and videos are a little bit more scripted and less like off the cuff. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can feel that too. And also like when we review things, like when you're reviewing laptops or another smartphone, it's like, oh yeah, I know what this is. I've seen this before. I kind of know the deal here. I will say straight up, I did not like this thing at all. It doesn't seem like fully baked. It doesn't even seem like they put it in the oven. I'll put it that way. Like, this is a cool looking device because it was designed by the folks at Teenage Engineering, and they make synthesizers and all sorts of cool stuff. I have a PC case from them that is just like kind of cool looking, but it has a cool look, and that's kind of it. And it kind of is reminiscent of the Playdate, which we've talked about, which Teenage Engineering also designed. Similarly square, it's thicker than the Playdate, uses not as good materials, I'd say. The plastic feels chintzier and cheaper. It feels like a kid's toy more than the Playdate does, because that one actually has metal and premium feeling stuff. But yeah, this is supposed to be a smart virtual, AI assistant. And at every step of the way, I just found it to be incredibly dumb, like absolutely dumb and frustrating. The idea is that, you can talk to it and just order an Uber to you without specifying exact locations and, hope that the driver actually comes to you, because you don't get much feedback from this tiny screen. The Uber service didn't work at all. But the thing that killed it for me is that I was able to order two sandwiches over DoorDash. And when I asked it to order some food, it gave me three random local restaurants, like not even like necessarily high quality ones. When I tapped into the restaurant, it only gave me six menu items. I couldn't customize them. I couldn't be like, just remove the cheese or something. All you could do is add menu items to the shopping cart, order it. This process, by the way, takes several minutes because it takes RabbitOS forever to load anything. I hit a button and it ordered it. Never confirmed payment, never confirmed delivery address or anything, right? It was working all entirely off of my DoorDash defaults. And I just kind of hoped and prayed that food showed up. And that to me does not seem like a good computer interaction, right? Like as soon as I placed that order, my phone started lighting up because the DoorDash app, which is helpful and works on a phone, was like, hey, order confirmed. This is your driver. Here's the location on the map. They're coming towards you. Like all this useful information when I'm hungry and I'm worried that my food is not coming to me. The Rabbit R1 occasionally will give you like updates like, hey, so they're coming. I don't know. No updates beyond that, but there's no like interface because this thing has a tiny screen and only talks to you. Like that's it.
You also can't ask it for order status. I tried to do that too. Yes. When I used DoorDash and I was like, this seems like it'd be a really useful thing for a voice assistant to be able to do, to be able to say, hey, how's my order doing? And yeah, that didn't work. But I agree. It's very odd that they only have a few menu items and they seem to be randomly selected. I don't know. Like, I ordered sushi through DoorDash and my choices were like this big sashimi platter for two. That was like $30, which I did not want to order. And then like a spicy tuna roll. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll get a couple of spicy tuna rolls.
Get some tuna rolls. Yeah. That was the only thing that actually worked about this thing because beyond that, the Rabbit R1 is just, it's kind of a dumb AI thing, right? You can ask it the questions you can ask Microsoft Copilot and ChatGPT and Google Bard and everything. You can ask it simple questions. It can do some translation. But the other stuff it does is just kind of dumb. Like, you can talk to it and have it create a Midjourney picture for you if you have a paid Midjourney account. Okay. What am I going to do with this?
I get four pictures. You could do that on your phone, though, too. I mean, you could do that. Gemini.
You could do everything
for you. Yes.
You could do everything this thing does on your phone.
That's the real rub of the problem is that everything you could do with the Rabbit, you can do better on your phone.
Faster, better, without paying an extra $200, by the way. This thing is $200. Doesn't have any monthly fees, but you can add a SIM card to it for like always on connectivity. But that you're just paying for it to be like always on and useless. Like that's the ultimate thing. So Sam, you've seen a lot of this stuff around the Rabbit and around the Humane AI pin. What are your thoughts at this point?
So my thoughts, and I kept kind of like working on like a rant in the background about this, but to me, both the Rabbit R1 and the Humane AI pin, they're closer to Virtual Boy than something like the Oculus Rift, right? Mm-hmm. The Virtual Boy was an interesting idea and like, you know, it like tapped
3D.
On like,
yeah,
it did 3D. It sort of did VR, but not in a way that anyone really wanted.
It gave you headaches and you would see red for a long time after using that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like it just seems like these are just like the way, way too early versions of AI based devices. And you can kind of see like especially the R1 is like, you know, there are some okay ideas or interesting ideas, like, you know, the large action model where like, hey, theoretically, I tell my device to do stuff and it does stuff regardless of app or just, you know, I can just give it directions. But, you know, this is sort of what, you know, Google Assistant has been trying to do for a long time and others. And so it's not necessarily a novel idea, but, you know, there is something there. But it's just like both of you were saying, it's just like so half-baked at this point. And I think like the big issue is that like you talk about these devices, they're using old smartphone chips, like not even like recent chips at all, so they're very underpowered. And then on top of that, smartphones have just gotten to the point where they have like NPUs that are worth anything. So like, you know, in being able to handle any sort of like AI machine learning tasks. And so obviously these things are wildly underpowered. And it's like you look at like the, you know, the pieces that are going into this thing, and it's like, of course they're just like don't deliver on what you want or expect. But I think, you know, they're trying to plant a flag because it's like, hey, if we can come up with an engaging idea and get people to care about us or at least know our name, maybe our second attempt will like be good sometime down the line.
Yeah,
but that's just a big ask because it's like when you come out with something that's this bad, you're just kind of ruining your reputation at the same time.
And the reputation of like the category too, right? Like the Humane AI pin, complete disaster, even more expensive and required a monthly fee.
Right.
And, this,
and,
yeah.
And that actually ties back perfectly to my Virtual Boy analogy, because the Virtual Boy came out in, like, what, the late 90s? And it was so bad that no one tried to do VR again for, like, a decade. And then it wasn't until, what, 2016, where, you know, we had the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive. And then they're like, oh, it's been long enough that, like, people forgot about how bad the Virtual Boy was, and they were willing to give these new headsets a chance. And even those, like, as good as they were, you know, VR is still not, like, fully hitting the mainstream. And, like, you know, some people might have a Quest at home or whatever, but, like, you know, it's not the same saturation level as smartphones, laptops, whatever.
What's funny is that Nintendo also tried 3D again with the 3DS, right, in the late 2000s, and, like, also kind of a rough launch. Like, so rough that they had to immediately lower the price and give, like, gifts to the people who bought it early because the 3D just didn't work so well. But, yeah, lots of learning. Like, even Nintendo, like, needs that learning time. I think the ultimate thing I just want to, like, say here about this thing is that I don't, what the hell is this thing for? It's not a phone replacement because it can't take calls. It can't do text messages. It's not a great phone companion because it's harder and slower to use than anything
you
can do
on your
phone.
It's also not connected to your phone, so it's not really a phone companion. Yeah. It's a standalone device. I had to hotspot it to my phone because I didn't want to buy another SIM card for it, but yeah.
Same. I was hotspotting to like get it to work elsewhere. I guess it's sort of a companion because, like, if DoorDash is on your phone, then you will get the alerts, like, as DoorDash, the service, is doing stuff on the Rabbit R1. But the point of it, it's just like the battery life is terrible. They recently released an update that made it less terrible. But when I first got this thing, the battery life would run down in like 4 hours while idling, while doing absolutely nothing. Now it'll run down in maybe 8 to 12 hours while doing absolutely nothing. Still not great for a device like this small and this that's not actually doing much. So the point of it just seems entirely like it's entirely missing. I'm wondering, do you guys think is there any hope for AI gadgets as a standalone thing? Or is this all just something we're going to be doing on our phones because we're paying a lot of money for phones? We're paying monthly service for phones. It seems like that's where we would want our AI smarts.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard to say right now. I definitely think for now, absolutely, this is the kind of technology that you'll see on a phone. I would love to see it on a smartwatch because that is something that is like, you know, nobody really likes interacting with such a tiny screen. So I feel like there's so much potential for features like this to be on like the Apple Watch or the Pixel Watch or something like that. And I hope it does. But yeah, right now I think, you know, it's funny because before Rabbit AI and before the Humane AI pin, like one of my first thoughts as generative AI became more popular was like, I wonder how this is going to impact phones, because that's my big beat here at CNET is mobile devices. So I was wondering, are phones going to change in any way? Are their designs going to change? Are there going to be new types of hardware that come out? And I didn't think that would be the case because the smartphone, as Sam said, is already so pervasive that we don't really have a need for anything else. So it is interesting to see this kind of stuff. But honestly, it's going to be hard to get it to progress faster if a lot of people aren't using it. So I think that's the other thing, too. And I think that's probably why they shipped this so early, so that their models can also learn from more people besides just their employees using it. So, I'm pretty skeptical right now about there being a need for AI hardware. This thing, I think you hit the nail on the head where the biggest issue with it is that it doesn't really do anything better than your phone right now, and there isn't a clear need for it. And I think that's why I reviewed it the way that I did. Like, yes, there are other issues and other bugs, like the battery drain issue that you mentioned was really, really bad. I'm not going to lie, it was hard for me to even film my video when I was, you know, making a video about this thing because we actually had to stop at the office like by lunchtime to like charge it up again because I didn't have a battery pack on me. So it was tough, but I knew that was something that they were going to fix, but that's not the big picture problem with this device. So I still, you know, I know they just put out an update, but I still feel confident in my overall assessment of this is that it's more about fundamentally what it can and can't do is like the big issue here. There are moments when I enjoyed it, but like I loved just using the camera to like point this at something and ask a question. You can do that on your phone, but I would argue that most people probably aren't.
It's more like a visibility, you know, awareness of certain types of features, right? Because, yeah, you can do computer vision stuff. You can point ChatGPT or Copilot or even like the Google Lens stuff, where, you know, add objects, have it describe things. And this does that. It has a cool camera that can rotate backwards or towards you. And Okay, fine. I guess I'm just like so flabbergasted how undercooked this entire project is. It reminds me of when like maybe 10 years ago, 10 or 15 years ago, when like there were more hardware startups and people were just trying to do crazy things. And it kind of felt like companies were just like gathering VC money because like, hey, we got this crazy buzzword pitch of a product. Give us millions of dollars. And I believe Rabbit has gotten quite a bit of VC funding in addition to like the pre-order money and stuff that they've gotten for this stuff. So they have the buzzword of AI that they're kind of writing. And the idea that they've showed off is that the large action model is something you could eventually train. You could show it how to use an app and maybe you could eventually command the RabbitR1 to do that. But I have no faith that this product will ever be updated to actually do that. Or even if they do, it won't work well. Because right. nothing works
there's
well
that
right
teaching
now.
Mode that's supposed to like teach it how to use other apps so that like it can do, you know, more than just DoorDash. And but like pretty much everything on that device, it's not really available yet, and there's no like real timeline of like when it will be instituted. So
they have like a vague timeline on the website of features like coming down the line, and training is like one. I asked Rabbit, like, hey, so when can we expect this? And they're like, hey, this is all we're saying right now, right? They're not giving actual time frames. So it could be the end of the year, it could be later. I don't know if this company will even be around in a year or two because of how like disastrous this entire thing is. A couple of things I want to point out. There were stories going around that the R1 itself is basically a underpowered phone that's running an Android app. Rabbit has denied claims that its like interface is an Android app, but there's an APK going around there. It looks like the same thing. It could be it's just using like a similar Linux base that allows it to also run on some Android phones. But again, even that like proves a point. Like, yes, it's running on stripped down version of hardware that people are already carrying. Why should people buy anything else? I'll also point out we've seen stories where Apple is working on further AI integration into iOS, the upcoming version. We've seen the stories that they were talking with Google and talking with OpenAI about that sort of integration. I'm sure more AI is coming to Android because like Google is all in at this point. So yeah, I think we're just going to see these things highlighted more in our operating systems. That's essentially what Copilot is in Windows 2, right? Just like, hey, AI is front and center. It's not like hidden behind a whole bunch of stuff. Do you guys have any thoughts, further thoughts about like, could AI actually be useful for us in mobile and desktop down the line? Or I'm a little like, I don't know how many of these things will actually be useful, but things like transcription are actually helping my life now. So that's something.
Yeah, I think it'll be hard to get like out of the habits that we're already so used to. So there's, I don't know if you guys are familiar, but there's also a company called Brain AI. They were at Mobile World Congress, and I think they have the most compelling implementation yet of like AI on a device because they are putting it on a phone. And instead of just not having apps be part of the equation entirely, they kind of generate this interface on top of your phone that sounds kind of similar to what Rabbit is trying to do. So if you want to buy something on Amazon, you could say, find me a tennis racket. It'll pull up a tennis racket and you can press and hold it and say, show me a video review of it. And like this idea of just being able to issue these commands to jump between different apps instead of closing the app, maybe copy and pasting that URL into YouTube and searching for the video, that kind of a thing, I think is really promising. But again, that's something that lives on a phone and it's not replacing apps. It's just kind of making it easier to jump between the two. I think that is going to be the most useful and compelling thing. And I think, you know, the big smartphone makers already kind of know that, especially Google, for one. I think Circle to Search is kind of a step towards that direction. But yeah, I also think that it's going to take a really long time to get there. I don't think this is something that's going to happen in like, I don't know, Android 16 or something. I don't think we're going to see this big reimagining of what like the smartphone operating system is. But I think it'll change slowly over time.
So one thing that like, I just thought of just now is like, I can't believe I'm going to mention Bixby, but like,
oh my God.
We even saw this years ago when Samsung introduced Bixby and they're like, hey, you can give it complex commands or you can say, you know, hey, Bixby, post the photo that I just took to Instagram. And so it would take something from your photo roll and post it to Instagram, which is like kind of like a, you know, semi-complex instruction set. And it would do that, you know, it wasn't 100%, but it was like, you know, maybe 75% of the time. And so that's kind of interesting. But like both of you were saying, it's super annoying because almost everybody's phone has better hardware than the Rabbit. And so the idea of like even if it is an app, and it, you know, there's, I can see some, like, you know, logic against that, like, you know, the large action model is like a proprietary thing that they're developing, and then it just happens to be like, you know, that's how you access it through, you know, the Rabbit, you know, built on Android, and okay, fine, but like, you know, you got to do more. But I did have one question for both of you, and so, like, looking at these devices, the AI Pen suffered from a lot of similar challenges, but when I'm, like, reviewing stuff, I always, like, try to look for, like, hey, is there, like, one redeemable quality of, like, the device? Like, hey, I want to see more of that. And so, like, for me, with the AI Pen, I kind of like the idea of, like, the laser projector as, like, hey, you don't want to wear smart glasses, but you can have a pen and it'll project a display on your hand, so you have, like, you know, a sort of, like, heads-up display-ish thing, but without having to look like, you know, a Google Glass nerd or whatever. Is there something on the, like, Rabbit R1 that you think is, like, redeemable? Is it the design? Is it, like, you know, whatever, you know?
I mean, personally, like, it looks kind of cool, but, like, Teenage Engineering can sell me, you know, a garden hose or something. Like, they put sure. their design talents on something. Like, I'll be like, oh, that's really compelling and minimalist and kind of cool looking. I think the main design thing they're selling here is, like, the rotating the scroll wheel. And I hate the scroll wheel. I hate it so much because it's the only way you can interact with the interface, even though the screen is a touch screen. And then it turns into a touch screen if you have to type in text. And I can't honestly think of, like, a single redeeming thing other than it looks kind of cool. But that's not on Rabbit. That's on Teenage Engineering, you know?
And you have to be really in love with that shade of orange because there's no other color options.
Yeah. It's very orange. You won't lose it. Mm-hmm. I think for me, so I actually do have, like, something nice to say about it. It doesn't make up for all of the shortcomings, of course, but I do think it was pretty good at understanding my intention when I would ask it something. Like, even if it couldn't answer the question, it would acknowledge what I asked and why, and it would tell me why it couldn't answer that question sometimes versus, like, you know, with Siri or something, you might get, I can't help with that, or I don't know how to help with that right now. Like, I don't feel like I really got that unless I was, like, maybe trying to use Uber and I couldn't really figure out why that wasn't working. But if I were to ask it a question, like, I pointed the camera at something I was eating for lunch and tried to ask it how many calories was in a meal like this. And it, you know, identified what was in the dish, but it's also said that it couldn't tell me the calorie information because it doesn't know much about the portion size or, you know, other ingredients in it. So I thought that was really interesting that it could understand me pretty well, but again, that's, you know, still not enough to make up for all the other shortcomings. But yeah,
it's like a nice change because it's like you were saying, it's like a lot of times when you're, like, talking to AI, it doesn't feel like you're on the same page. So just to feel like it's like, oh, it kind of, like, understands me a little bit is, you know, it's a kind of nice development, I guess.
The other thing about the Rabbit R1 that I thought was really kind of hindered the experience was the fact that once it answers something for you, there's no way to find that answer again. Like, when I was, I thought, yeah, you know, sightseeing was a great example because you're asking it for things nearby. You're asking it to identify things. And when I would ask it for ideas of things to do in the neighborhood or whatever, it gives me this really long-winded answer that sometimes was actually quite good. Like, you know, the recommendations weren't bad. But then I couldn't find those answers again. And one time I asked, I think I was asking it to build me, like, a vacation itinerary or something, and it gave me some points of interest. And I was like, can you send that to my email or can you save that to my journal? And it told me no, and it told me to write it down. It literally said you could just jot it down, which I thought was kind of funny.
Do you have a pen and paper?
Like, is your job?
That's your job, AI. It is a very good device at telling you what it can't do. Like, yeah, I got the alert too with Uber and DoorDash. Like, it's maybe kind of slow on RabbitOS. Like, it literally says that may or may not work depending on where you are. Good to know that Uber didn't work for you too, Lisa, because I asked Rabbit about this and they're like, it depends on what the partners allow. It depends on what Uber allows them to get access to. So if any of these companies are like, I don't want this stupid AI company to be, like, doing weird stuff with their AI stuff, they can just block access to it entirely, and I haven't seen anybody use the Uber thing at this point, so maybe
there's
just
also some
dead.
Like, tinkering that needs to happen sometimes, because I couldn't get DoorDash to work at first either, and I was wondering why, and I realized, I don't know if this is why, but this did work for me. I noticed that Apple Pay was my default payment method on DoorDash, and it would make sense that it wouldn't work through the R1 because you can't you need to authenticate it through your phone. So that's probably why it didn't work. But
of course, it wouldn't tell you.
It wouldn't be like, hey,
I'm having a payment issue. Can you please confirm you have a credit card or something like that? No more devices like this. I don't like. Please, if you're gonna throw us things to review, please have them be done. That's all I ask. DaVinci,
I think I got bad news for you because this is not the last time we're gonna see anything like this.
I'm sure, but I hope the like viscerally negative reaction to the Humane AI pin, and I'm assuming this one, is going to be a sign, maybe a warning to some companies that are gonna try to attempt this. So we'll see,
or maybe not. Maybe they don't care, and they like, because both of these devices, even though it's bad attention, they still got a lot of attention. So
they got a lot of attention. Yeah. It's more like, when will the VC money dry up? Because that is what is enabling these startups to do their things. I can imagine Samsung and other companies will just like keep pouring money at like these weird experiments. But a small company like Rabbit, which we had never heard about, but we're doing weird teases before CES. I don't know if this will be a thing again. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, but I think VC spending a lot of money on AI hype, that has to stop at some point, you know? So anyway, Lisa, where can people find you online these days?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on X. I almost said Twitter. At Lisa.
You can say Twitter. We all say Twitter. It's fine.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Lisa Edichico. I'm also on Threads at Lisa Edichico. And of course, you can find my work on CNET.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And check out Lisa's review. My review will be going up soon, too.
Of course. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's move on to some other news. I think some of the biggest news this week that I've been seeing is that Elon Musk is on a tear. He's apparently on a tear at Tesla, where it seems like he has fired everybody working on the supercharger project. So that is the EV charging. The whole setup for that thing impacts the executive leaders, 500 staffers. I find this kind of baffling, because isn't Tesla getting a lot of money to spread the supercharger network? Isn't like that a linchpin of other companies working together with the supercharger network? Sam, like, you have been looking at the car stuff. Do you have any sense of like what's happening here?
It is pretty baffling. And like, it's just super annoying because, you know, most of the car makers have switched over to NACS, which was a Tesla developed connector, although now, you know, it's available for everybody. So it's like really just like, what's the biggest issue that everyone talks about EVs? It's like, don't have enough chargers, or the chargers are slow, or a lot of times they're broken and don't work. Unreliable. So it's just like super annoying. Be like, you finally, you know, convince everyone to adopt the same connector. There is a big network, but it's going to need to be a lot bigger for more people to, you know, really want to adopt EVs. And it's just like, the timing is just like really just not great.
Do you think it's like, I mean, we know Musk is a capricious guy who like will just like make decisions like on a whim. Is this like a weird response, like an anti-Biden response? Like, he has also been like working with a cabal of people against the current government, apparently. Like, there's like a whole, he's becoming more and more right wing.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's part of it.
It could be. My theory is that, you know, Tesla stock is not doing well. You know, they had a real, you know, disappointing sales in Q1. And I think, you know, they've recently done a bunch of layoffs. And I think this is Elon's just like, you know, revenue doesn't look good. We're going to axe a ton of people. And in this case, unfortunately, axing an entire department gets some payroll off the books. But it just feels really ham-fisted. Now, we should probably mention that, like, someone on Twitter asked Elon about this, and He said, the Supercharger network will still grow, but, quote, just at a slower pace for new locations and more focus on 100% uptime and expansion of existing locations. So there is a little bit of like, okay, I get it. Like, one of the big issues is that with a lot of, like, you know, Ford and other companies using the Tesla Supercharging network, the cables on superchargers are not long enough to accommodate, like, all the different charging port locations on these various models. So there is a lot of work to be done about that in terms of, like, hey, getting a cord that's long enough, that's not broken, so that it can accommodate more than just Tesla-specific vehicles.
But how is he going to do that? How are they going to do that without the vast majority of the supercharger team? That's where I'm a little confused.
I mean, yeah, that's the big question. I mean, who knows? It's like, you know, is it simple as like, hey, you know, we assign some contractor to go and, you know, swap out a cable? Who knows? But yeah, so there is a little bit of positivity, but it's still overall kind of a baffling decision.
We did also recently talk about a judge recently rejected Musk's proposal for a pay package, right? The $55.8 billion pay package from Tesla. The judge called that an unfathomable sum of money. I almost wonder if he's like, okay, well, we're going to cut costs and I'm going to get money out of this company somehow at some point. So maybe just by
trying to pinch a few pennies to make sure that his, like, options payout is bigger. Just, you know, not the greatest optics, especially in the wake of layoffs.
Did they open source something, Sam? Was it the connector or the supercharger setup?
Yeah, the NACS was a Tesla patent, but now it is available for, you know, open.
But that's just the plug. That is just like the interface, right? Not
the connector.
Whole,
yeah.
Yeah. Not the whole other thing. I do want to point out several people have reported that, Tesla took in $17 million in EV charging grants to essentially support the supercharger network. So this is, yeah, kind of stinks. Another Elon Musk special, I guess. In other news, we saw that the FCC is fining America's largest wireless carriers $200 million for selling customer location data. Basically, this is like location information being sold to aggregators. This affects AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, and T-Mobile together. Remember Sprint? Okay, I remember when this story initially broke, and this seems like, okay, this is like a genuine payment. It's not just like a slap on the wrist fine. $200 million in total across all these carriers. That's something. And maybe we'll hopefully prevent them from doing something like this again. Right, Sam?
The whole problem of, like, you know, data breaches and stuff like that, it just becomes such a pervasive thing. It feels like there's a new breach happening every day. And it's like, at some point, you have to hold these companies accountable for, you know, leveraging, you know, holding people's information and then not protecting it in a way that... And so, like, you know, I think
actively selling it, like actively profiting from it when
absolutely.
People didn't realize.
And so, like, I know in terms of, like, the data breaches, like T-Mobile has, like, you know, given people, like, subscriptions to some, like, the watchdog services, which is nice. But, like, and this is, it's just becoming a wide growing problem. I think GM ran into this where they were selling data on the driving history of owners. And it's just like, at some point, we're going to need some sort of regulation to step in and be like, hey, this is not okay. Because until they do that, companies are going to say, hey, I can make a quick buck. And even if things go wrong, it's, you know, they're not responsible for any of the damages.
And companies are doing this across the board. Like, we've seen the reports about, you know, advertisements in TVs. Like, companies are making money because you're seeing advertisements in a product you've already bought. You know, a product that you probably did not even expect ads in, but that is extra money, extra revenue for all these companies. I think the FCC is finally paying more attention. I think that's the main thing. You know, the real-time location data selling that became, they knew about that in 2018. So, like, this is all kind of a response to that thing. T-Mobile is facing the biggest fine, $80 million, because Sprint was also fined $12 million. AT&T said the decision lacked both legal and factual merit. And the decision, quote, perversely punishes the companies for supporting life-saving location services. I think you can support life-saving location services without selling people's data. I think that's
right.
That's
kind of like throwing the baby out with the bathwater situation. Where it's like, there are good, legitimate uses of this, but you don't have to profit on every single, you know, item of point of data.
Anyway, Another fun thing, Razer announced it's going to be refunding Zephyr mask costs to buyers because remember they claimed this thing? This was the light-up mask. They claimed it was an N95 mask. This is part of a more than $1.1 million settlement with the FTC because the FTC like looked at everything Razer was saying and they said no. That's not actually true. I remember we covered some of the Sam and we were like, this is a cool looking mask. I would buy this powered
have one.
Mask.
Yeah. I stupidly put it on like I think last year when the wildfires like made the whole sky turn orange in like Northeast. And so even when it was out, there was like some very fine like semantic arguing about like its N95 like capabilities. And it seems that Razer probably erred even probably too strongly on even mentioning N95 capabilities at all. And so that's, you know, what they're really getting trouble for. And, you know, it kind of makes sense because Razer, not exactly known for making, like, medical, like, PPE-type devices. And so, like, you got to be careful about that stuff. And, hopefully they learn their lesson.
I mean, hopefully all these companies learn. Razer is one of those companies that is like loudly good at spouting like marketing claims, right? And like that moment of the pandemic too was when I think a lot of people were thinking like, I could make money selling masks, right? We could sell masks.
And it was kind of crazy how fast they turned this thing around because like, you know, this thing had RGB built in. It had some fans built in. And they were talking about like, you know, they were going to make a future version with like, voice amplification and like some other features. Yes. And it's just like, okay, you know,
so we could all sound
like
RoboCop.
To see like, see like a tech company take on the idea of like, what if we have to live in a world where you have to wear masks all the time? But at the same time, it's like, you have to do the basics right.
I'm reading from a report here. According to the FTC, Razer never submitted the Zephyr mask for testing to the FDA. Which certifies things for things like N95. The company is handing over pretty much all the money it earned, all the money it earned from selling these masks to the FTC, and the FTC is going to dole it back out to customers. So, okay. We also saw the news. I don't know if you have feelings about this, Sam, but Drake deleted his AI-generated Tupac track after Tupac Shakur's estate was like, don't do that. You didn't get permission to use the voice. And this is amid the whole, like, the diss track, like, back and forth, right, between him and Kendrick and everybody else. I don't know if you have thoughts about this, but it is hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, it's very funny, but at the same time, it's, like, you know better because it's, like, you're taking, you know, one of the greats of, like, you know, rap history and using it for, like, a kind of silly purpose without permission, which you knew about, and it's, like, okay, probably do that. And then also this is tied into like the whole Taylor Swift drama situation too somehow. And it's just, I don't know.
It's I think we're going to see more and more of this. So yeah, not too surprised. But every time I see a new update from the whole like diss track back and forth, I don't know what to think about it. That aspect of pop culture, like so much Taylor Swift stuff is just like far beyond everything I'm thinking about right now.
It's like hard to keep up.
Yeah. It is hard to keep up. Let's move on to what we're working on. Sam, what do you want to shout out?
Yeah, I got the Alienware M16 R2.
Oh, nice,
In for review. You know, we saw that back at CES, but now it's finally available. So, you know, I want to do a full review on that. I just heard that the MSI Claw is coming in, so hopefully we'll check that out in the future at some point. That could be a little spicy, but we'll see.
The Claw.
You know, we got some like a big kitchen package coming out sometime in May, and so I'm testing out the Breville Infizz, which is sort of like their version of a SodaStream. But there are actually some really cool advantages to this thing. Most notably, it will carbonate pretty much anything. It doesn't like. You know, it doesn't have to be just water. You could carbonate orange juice, lemonade, whatever.
I'm a Breville fanboy, so I am intrigued by that. There was another company that has also made something that you can fizz anything.
Yeah, it's the Drink Master.
The Drink Master, yeah. So,
In my opinion, the Infizz just looks a lot better. The name is not the best, but yeah, it looks better, super easy to use. And then I'm also testing out the Ninja Creamy because, you know, summer's coming up soon. Everyone, you know, what's better than ice cream on a hot day?
I'll tell you what's better, though, is shaved ice. I have a shave ice maker. It's like $100, but It's great because the kids, always
thank
love
you for
it.
Reminding me, because yes. I need to test out if this thing can do shaved ice.
Yes, definitely worth a thing. But it's also like when you have kids, giving them just essentially crushed ice is so much better than ice cream, which, you know, is packed with sugar. With the crushed ice, it's like you can put a little bit of syrup. You don't have to like go heavy
on it.
I'm also a shave ice fiend. So this is my summer already. Like I'm just like devouring this stuff. But yeah, love Breville products, Sam. I love the way they look. I have several in my kitchen right now. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that stuff. I am still in the midst of testing the new Surface devices. The Rabbit review kind of took priority. I'm probably going to do some quick reviews on these things because they don't actually look different. The Surface Pro 10 and the Laptop 6 for business. Both of them for business. And we're also prepping for the Microsoft Build event where we're expecting to see like consumer versions of these surfaces and maybe something very new. I don't know what that'll be. So that's what I'm dealing with right now. A rounding gadget, Billy Steele has reviewed the Beats Solo 4. I gave it a score of 78. And he says it has upgraded audio, extended battery life, a familiar design. These look like the Beats Solo, like how they've always looked. I don't know if you've experienced these, Sam, but like I reviewed the Beats Solo 2 in like 2014, and these don't look very different.
Now that like the AirPod Maxes and like the whole AirPods like family has like expanded a little bit, I am legitimately not sure why that Beats branding still exists.
It's very weird. I mean, I could see it for certain types of things, but apply Beats to Apple stuff too. It's from what we've read, there are two separate hardware divisions. Beats has its own speaker and like headphone makers, and Apple has its own people, and they just never are like really combining their efforts.
Yeah, I have to wonder, is like, are there enough people who are like Beats like brand loyalty where like continuing to like, you know, have two separate teams makes sense? I mean, I guess that's probably a question for Apple, but I feel like there isn't.
It is that's a rare case, right? Where Apple bought a company like full on, like paid, what was it? I forget how many billions, but it was a big chunk.
Yeah, Dr. Dre got like a big payoff.
We're watching the collapse of Peloton, by the way. We at some point predicted like Peloton would be a good fit for Apple. Peloton is collapsing right now as we speak, and I could still see like Apple being like, we could do something with that hardware and with like the basic infrastructure that they set up. But I don't know if Beats is actually working out for them. So maybe that's a point against it. I guess we'll see. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. Sam, what do you got?
I just finished up. I know this came out a little while back, but I finished up Lupin season 3, which is truly
love
excellent.
Lupin. Yeah.
You know, if you need a good like, you know, spy, you know, con man caper drama, it's excellent. And then recently I just picked up Kaiju number 8, which is an anime. The whole premise is that this guy, we live in a Japan where kaiju come and kind of stomp on the cities all the time. And the main character works for the crew that cleans up after the kaiju remains.
Yeah.
And then at some point he gets some powers, but I don't want to ruin anything. But it's really good. Enjoying it so far. It's kind of like an offbeat take on, you know, the superhero kaiju genre, which, you know, is fresh enough where it feels, you know, nice and original and definitely interesting.
Awesome. I will check that out. I want to shout out a movie that's hitting limited release this week and will be available later this month. And it's called I Saw the TV Glow, directed by Jane Schoenbrunn. And they had made a movie called We All Went to the World's Fair, I believe. Sherlyn reviewed that at Sundance talked about it a while back. This is a fascinating movie. It is sort of a movie for anybody who grew up in the 90s and was like obsessed with Buffy and shows like that. And I totally relate to that experience, but it's also using that as a lens for basically the trans experience in the 90s and right after, of being so obsessed with another world where your body doesn't feel like your own, where you feel like you don't even belong in this space. It is kind of juggling all those things. It is a beautiful movie. It's beautiful. It's dark and twisted and maybe a little slow at times, but I just found it to be really compelling and really fascinating. And certainly as one of those folks, I don't know about you, Sam, but I was like such a Buffy head because I did not like where I was living, you know, when I was a teenager. So like to escape and to be somewhere else and to come up with like super fans, to meet up with people who were also similarly obsessed. And the 90s were a special time because it's not like you had a ton of content coming, right? If you wanted to see something, somebody basically had to turn you onto it. And then you had to share tapes because reruns weren't really a thing. You can just like buy a DVD box set. You couldn't stream anything.
It was like the last analog era.
Yeah.
And so it's like this wasn't on my radar, but like I was a 90s kid. So yep. Like to see this is like, you know, I'm interested. I'm like, you know, I feel like we're at the age where like we're getting nostalgic for those 90s, and like, you know, other directors and creative types are like, hey, they're kind of channeling some of that. So it's like kind of coming around again, which I believe, I'm all for.
James Schoenbrum is also a 90s kid. Like they live through this as well. And it is fascinating to see this channeled. I have never seen like the way we used to get obsessed about TV shows just really distilled in a way that also feels very true and feels very real. It's just like a touchstone of my life. Like I was so into these shows like in high school and in college. Those were my friend circles, right? Those were the people I hung out with. And it's such a big thing. It's sort of weird. Like, yeah, you can get obsessed with shows right now, but there's so much going on, right? Like when Buffy was a thing, when all these shows were a thing, it's like, no, you get really into these shows because it's not like you have too much other genre stuff to dive into. Yeah.
The amount of choice was so limited that like you find one thing, it's like that is your thing because there's nothing else.
I freaking love this movie. When you get a chance to see it, I think totally worth it. Starring Justice Smith, by the way, who's in the Detective Pikachu movie. Like he's been in all sorts of stuff, but I think this is a towering performance from him. He was in Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, right? He's been in Dungeons and Dragons. I've also loved him in like all the stuff they've been in. So
I thought he was great in Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons, so good. Underrated, like one of the best movies of last year. But yeah, that's it. Check out I Saw the TV Glow. And yeah, check out Jane Schoenbrum's other film, which I believe you can get on demand right now. All right, that's it for the episode, folks. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford.
And you can find me online at Devendra on Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, all over the place. I'm on Threads, but don't hit me up at Threads, please. And yeah, hopefully Sherlyn will be back next week too. She just needed a break this week. We're all so busy. Email us at podcastengadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.